feet and daylight unto my path. And a light unto, a light unto my path, my path.
Welcome to Searchlight, a survey through Scripture with Pastor John Corson. It is our desire to bring you a systematic study of the entire Bible, chapter by chapter, book by book. We all have a desire to be used by God and to minister for Him, but sometimes it just seems impossible to us. It may seem like we will never be able to get through to someone who needs to hear the gospel, or it may simply be that we recognize our own failings. Whatever the reason, we just don't break through in ministry like we want, and then we lose hope. But in our study today in 2 Samuel chapter 5, we will see a story which teaches us to have hope. It is the story of David when he conquers Jerusalem and makes it the capital of Israel. Let's now join John as he takes us through this story, and we can learn how we can be used by God.
2 Samuel chapter 5, beginning at verse 4. David was 30 years old when he began to reign, and he reigned 40 years. In Hebron, he reigned over Judah, the tribe of Judah, 7 years and 6 months. And in Jerusalem, he reigned 33 years over all Israel and Judah, for a total of 40 years. David has now ascended to the throne. King Saul is off the scene. He met his fate on Mount Gilboa, as we saw in our study last week. And now we see David ascending to the throne. He's the king of the land. He would rule for 40 years. The first thing, though, that he would do once he became the king of all of Israel, it interests me. And I think there's a lesson of real practicality for you and for me. As he comes to the throne, as he begins his reign, look what he does. It says in verse 6, "And the king," that is David, "and his men went to Jerusalem unto the Jebusites, the inhabitants of the land, which spake unto David, saying, Except thou take away the blind and the lame, thou shalt not come in hither," thinking David cannot come in hither. "Nevertheless, David took the stronghold of Zion, and the same is the city of David." Once David became king of all the land, he grabbed his boys, he took his men that day and said, "We're going to take Jerusalem and make that our capital city." At that time, Jerusalem was occupied by the Jebusites. The Jebusites were Canaanites, that is, they were enemies of the people of Israel. The Jebusites descended from Jebus, whose name literally means "he will be trodden down." Jebus, the Jebusites, that's what their name means literally. He or they will be trodden down. And that's what's going to happen in our story today here at Jerusalem. David wanted to make Jerusalem the capital for a political reason. That is, it was on the boundary, the border of the tribes of Judah and Benjamin. And thus, by making that his capital city, he wouldn't be in either Judah or Benjamin directly, but on the border, on the boundary. And so, no tribe of Israel could say, "Hey, David chose our tribe to have his capital in." It was a good move politically, sort of neutral territory. Thus, no tribe could claim to be favored by David, you see. Good move politically. But it was also a good move historically, spiritually. Because Jerusalem, you might recall way back in the book of Genesis chapter 14, centuries earlier, how when Abraham, Father Abraham, the friend of God, was making his way back from rescuing his nephew Lot, he came to the environs of Jerusalem. And a man came out to meet Abraham, a mysterious man, a marvelous man, whose name was Melchizedek. Melchizedek, we are told, this king of Jerusalem. Melchizedek, it means king of righteousness, and he was the king of Jerusalem. He came to Abraham with bread and wine in his hand. And Abraham saw Melchizedek with bread and wine, the emblems of communion. And Abraham worshiped Melchizedek and gave tithes to Melchizedek. Melchizedek, this man, this mysterious man, who was he? I believe strongly he was a Christophany, that is, an appearance of Christ in the Old Testament before Christ came as the babe of Bethlehem, Jesus of Nazareth. It was Jesus, I believe. It was Christ. Or at the very least, he was a type of Christ, a picture of Christ. For we are told that this king of righteousness, Melchizedek, had neither beginning nor end. He was the king of Salem, the king of peace, the king of Jerusalem. Be that as it may, this city, Jerusalem, has a rich history. It was prudent for David to take it politically. And so David said, that's exactly what I'm going to do. Jerusalem is going to be my capital. So he and his boys head for that city. And when they arrive, the Jebusites, who occupied the city at that time, they taunted David. And they said to David and to his men, except you take away the blind and the lame, verse 6, you're not going to come in here. It was a taunt. It was a tease. Even the blind and the lame can keep you guys away. The blind and the lame. They'll keep you away. It was a teasing. It was a taunting. But it was more than that. It was a tactic. What do you mean it was a tactic? In those days, the Jebusites had a means of protecting their city. You see, many times the enemy would sneak at night and attack when it was dark. And so what they would do on the walls of the city, the walls would have a flat place in which men could stand or people could gather. And on the top of the walls, blind men were stationed. Why? Because blind men who couldn't see had an especially keen sense of hearing. And in the night, if there was men sneaking outside trying to make their way up to come into Jerusalem, the blind guys could hear them when others wouldn't be able to. So they put these blind guys up on the wall, and they would listen carefully. The lame guys were there too, because you see, if somebody was coming, the blind guys would hear it and sound the alarm, and the lame guys would scream as loud as they could, and they were unable to run away because they were lame. So they would stay there. They were stuck there. They couldn't get away. They would cry and scream and yell until somebody would come and get them and carry them down, you see. It was a way to make sure that those that knew that an attack was underway or that guys were trying to sneak in, that they themselves wouldn't just run away, because the blind guys would hear it and the lame guys would yell at the top of their lungs, somebody's trying to break in, somebody's coming our way. And they would keep yelling and yelling. They couldn't run. They were lame, you see. Quite an ingenious system. And that's what the Jebusites really did do. They put their lame and their blind on the tops of the walls of the city to be an alarm system that wouldn't run away, but were posted there and had to stay until they sounded the alarm. The whole city was woken up or awakened up, and then someone would make their way and rescue them, perhaps, hopefully, you see. So what's being said here is this. David, you can't get in here. There's no way that you and your boys can sneak in. There's no way you and your boys can take us on. We're in the city. The walls are around us. The blind and the lame will keep you in your place. You don't have a chance. You don't have a prayer. David then said, yeah, want to see? David took that as a challenge. It says in verse 7, nevertheless, even though that's what they said, the blind and the lame can keep you at bay. You can't come and get us. No way. Nevertheless, verse 7, David took the stronghold of Zion, and now the same is the city of David. David took the stronghold of Zion. That Jerusalem, also called Zion. By the way, Zion, another name for Jerusalem, Zion means one of two things. It can be translated either parched place or sunny spot. Either parched place or sunny spot. Why? Because the sun shines there and it gets really hot. And there are those that would look and say, ah, this is just parched. Others would say, no, it's a happy day. It's sunshiny, you see. It all depends on your perspective, whether Zion is translated parched place or sunny spot. Kind of like when the two optimists meet. They shake hands heartily. When the two pessimists meet, they shake heads depressingly, you see. They just shake their heads and are depressed. It all depends on your perspective, you see. And so Zion, another name for Jerusalem. And in our story, we read that David and his boys took the city. And they took it, made it their capital, where it remains the important capital for the people of Israel for all of history and on into the kingdom age ultimately as well. Now, how did they take the city? The Jebusites were so certain, no way that David and his men can break in. No way can that happen. Jerusalem, it sits in an elevated position, valleys on three sides, the south, the east, and the west. The north is the only way that you can really attack the city, and that is heavily fortified. It seems to be impenetrable, Jerusalem, Zion. And that's what the Jebusites thought. That's why they said, no way can you come in. But they did. How? Well, on that, there hangs a tale. In that, there's quite a story. Look at the next verse. Verse 8, David said on that day, whosoever getteth up to the gutter, the water shaft, and smiteth the Jebusites and the lame and the blind that are hated of David's soul, he shall be chief and he shall be captain. Wherefore they said, the blind and the lame shall not come into the house. That quotation of the Jebusites. So, verse 9, David dwelt in the fort and he called it the city of David. And David, verse 10, went on and grew great, and the Lord God of hosts was with him. David and his men took the city. How? David said to his boys that day, he said, fellas, the first one that finds the gutter and shimmies up that shaft and goes in and opens up the gates that we might go through and kill these Jebusites that are taunting us, these Canaanites that are our enemies. The first one that can find the gutter and shimmy up the shaft is going to be my general, is going to be my captain. See, because Jerusalem sits in an elevated position with valleys on three sides, there is a gutter or a shaft, we would say today, about 75 feet vertically that goes from the floor of Jerusalem straight down to the Kidron Valley down below where the water would flow. And what would happen is that they would take the water from the Kidron Valley, from Siloam there, and they would actually bring it up through the shaft 75 feet up and bring it into the city. Now, the entryway into that shaft would be camouflaged, hard to find. And David knew, though, that they had to have water up in the city. They couldn't survive without it, obviously. David said, whoever finds that shaft, that gutter, whoever finds that shaft and shimmies up is going to be my man. There was one that found that shaft. 1 Chronicles chapter 11 tells us his name was Joab. Joab was not the greatest guy in the world, as we shall see in future studies. He was devious, he was treacherous, he was just plain old mean, quite frankly. He was not the greatest guy, not by any stretch, but this he did do. He found a way to get into the city. He discovered where the entrance was into the shaft. I've been in that shaft. I've stood in that shaft. I've looked up, and I've often pondered, how did Joab do that? How did he shimmy up that shaft 75 feet, a vertical drop, sheer rock, sheer face? He went his way up that shaft. How? I don't have a clue. But he made his way up the shaft, came to the city, and then went through and opened up the gates for David and his men to pour in and wipe out the Jebusites, you see. From that time on, Joab was David's general. Joab was David's captain. Joab was David's man. Even though he wasn't the greatest of guys, yet this he did do. He found a way in. He shimmied up the shaft. When others didn't, others couldn't, others wouldn't, Joab did. And because of that, David said, you're the man. You're my general. And for the next 40 years, Joab would be just that. Joab would be David's general. Now, the lesson, an important one for you, an important one for me. Because you see, we too are serving a greater than David, the son of David. We have a king, the King of Kings, and our king, the son of David, Jesus Christ, desires to do so many things, to take that city and that county and that group and that person and that couple and that family. Our king, Jesus, wants to beat back the Jebusites spiritually. Those that are keeping people in bondage. Jesus Christ wants to see those forces trodden down, just like the Jebusite name means. He will be trodden down. And what does the Lord do? He comes to a group of people like me and you. And what does he say? I want to take on that town. I want to touch those folks. I want to talk to him. I want to see her saved and brought in. And the first one that will shimmy up the shaft, so to speak, is going to be my man. You might not be, I might not be, we might not be the greatest. We might not be the most worthy, the most qualified, the best trained, the most spiritual, whatever it might be. But I'll tell you this, this is a lesson, a story, an illustration of what our king is after. Just like King David said, the first one in is my man. The son of David, the King of Kings, says to you and me, the first one that will find a way, I'm going to use mightily. See, this is the thing. There are things that the Lord puts on your heart, thoughts that he places in your mind, things that you know that the Lord would want to do in touching that neighbor and having that Bible study and reaching those folks and getting involved in that ministry. You know that that's the heart of the Lord. And you feel that tug on the strings of your soul. And that thought is in your mind and it just won't leave. It just won't go. But then you hear the taunting of the enemy. No way! You're blind, you're lame. No way are you going to make an impact. No way is that going to work out. No way is that going to take place. Forget about it. The blind and the lame can keep you out. You're crazy. You're not worthy. It's not going to happen, you see. That's what the enemy says over and over and over and over. Yeah, I can't do that. I can't talk to him. I'm not going to be able to witness to her. I'm not going to be able to do that or go there. I'm just blind and lame. If that's the way you see yourself, Leviticus chapter 21 says something of interest to you, to me. Leviticus 21, right around verse 18, it says, "Those that are blind and lame shall not serve bread in my house, saith the Lord." What? Those that are blind and lame shall not serve bread in my house, saith the Lord. Well, then how can I be used to give out the bread of life? How can I be used to help out the children of God? How can I be used to share the good news of the gospel? I'm blind and I'm lame. Listen to me. This is important. It's true. The enemy does point out that we are blind and lame. But in Luke chapter 21, or pardon me, in Matthew chapter 21, listen to this. Jesus went in to the courtyard of the temple. And it says, when he was there, he says, and the blind and the lame came to him in the temple, and he healed them all. I like that. The Old Testament law says the blind and the lame cannot come into the temple and serve holy bread. They're disqualified from ministry. But in the New Testament, Jesus shows up and he meets the blind and the lame in the courtyard of the temple and he heals them totally. That's the thing. I have been touched. You have been too, because we're in this temple. We're with our King who wants to set me free and help me to see. I don't have to be blind. See, the thing is, faith sees what can be. Faith is the bird. Faith is the bird that sings in the morning before the sun has risen, before the day has broken, before the light is seen. Faith is the bird, that thing in your soul that sings, that says, I know this doesn't make sense, but I feel in my soul, it's something which I feel deep within me that the Lord wants to do for you or for her or for them. And I want to be used, Lord, so use me to talk to him. Use me to go there. That's what William Carey said, the great missionary who made his way to the subcontinent of India in the 1800s and opened up India for the gospel. William Carey said, "Attempt great things for God and expect great things from God. Shimmy up the shaft." Others would say, "Well, we just can't find a way in. And even if we do, the shaft is too steep. The challenge is too great. Or I'm afraid of heights," or whatever it might be. William Carey would say, "Attempt great things for God. Expect great things from God."
Now that's a good attitude, and it is based on understanding who God is and what he wants to do through us. John will continue this important teaching on our next program. Please join us again then. This teaching is also available on the Searchlight website at johncorson.com. You will also find on the website Pastor John's books and other Bible study resources. Again, the address of the website is johncorson.com.
We would like to remind you that on the Searchlight website, you can find Pastor John's teachings through the entire Bible. You can listen to the audio or watch the video of any of these teachings from the website at any time for no charge. The Searchlight website address is johncorson.com.
Searchlight is an independent ministry that is not financially supported by any church or organization. We appreciate your prayers and support. May the Lord richly bless you.